Hello everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and this is Hacker Public Radio hijacking Og Camp 11. Og Camp is over. What about Og Camp 12? I'm here talking to a man you might know, and Dan from the Linux Outlaws. How are you doing, Dan?
I'm doing great. Yeah, a little tired after the this is Sunday night, so we're just coming down from packing up, and yeah, it's great. It's tiring at the minute, but it's always worth it.
Must be a massive buzz to start off something and then have thousands of people turn up for no reason at all.
Yeah, it's not quite thousands yet, but it is great. Yeah, I mean, I always love it that anyone turns up, really. And the really mind-blowing thing for me is that people travel from different parts of the world. We've got someone came from America just for this. Because when he said he'd come from America, I thought he meant he was here for a holiday or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came along, but no, he came just for this from Charlotte somewhere in America. That's quite impressive. Yeah, so it's really good fun to see people doing that and meeting each other as well, because that's the main thing. I was just saying to someone else, it's really good when I see two people that I know, but they don't know each other, if that makes sense. If two friends of mine, mutual friends who don't know each other, and then they meet each other at an event like this that I've arranged or we've arranged together, and you see them getting on really well, and they get ideas for projects, and that's happened quite a lot this weekend, so that's always good.
No, it's been absolutely fantastic, and I'd like to thank you and the Ubuntu UK podcast folks for allowing me to come down and basically grab anybody that moved and record an interview.
Yeah.
I was at the show last night, just changing tack for a second, and you played live.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other shows that people might not be aware of that you do, although I don't know how that's possible, is Rat Hole Radio.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that podcast?
Yeah, Rat Hole Radio was my kind of attempt at being John Peel, I suppose, in some ways. I don't know. I have a very strange kind of thing when it comes to music. I like all different styles of music, and I like different artists from different genres and things, but I don't always like two artists in the same genre. I think there's good music and bad music in all different kind of genres, so I'll listen to them. It's a bit like food. I remember years ago someone said to me, music is like food, and you wouldn't eat the same meal three times a day, every day. You want different things at different times, and you know, for me, music is the same. I don't know anyone, I'm trying to think, maybe one person who doesn't listen to anything but like one kind of music. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important, and the idea of the show was I get to play records and things that I liked. I still call them records, it's old-fashioned I am. Not that they're records these days, but yeah. And yeah, I play Creative Commons tracks. I focus on independent musicians because, there's no point in me playing what's coming out on the major labels, apart from the fact that it's probably illegal for me to do that and they could shut me down. I don't want to promote what they're doing because that's their job. I want to promote people who are independent musicians trying hard to do something. And if I listen to them and I like them, then that's just all I want to do is like let other people hear that they're good, and hopefully it gets passed on. And the most satisfying thing is when an artist has an upturn in, say, downloads or something of their music, when it's been on the show, because that's what I want, is for people to say, I think this, I mean, just because I think it's good doesn't mean it necessarily is to them, but I say, I like this, and quite often they'll listen to it and say, oh, I like that as well, and then go and buy even concert tickets and, you know, albums and things from these artists when they've heard the track free as well. So it helps to spread it around. That's hopefully the goal.
Yep. And you're involved in a band, 20 Pound Sound.
Yes, yeah, I play guitar and sing in a band called 20 Pound Sounds. We only started about a little over a year ago, so we're relatively young in the band sense, although not in the, we're all quite old, but that's very confusing. But yeah, it's some philosophy in there somewhere. We've been going, yeah, about a year. We've got about 11 original tracks now, which I coined the phrase, we go all the way up to 11. Once we had 11 original songs, I thought that was quite good. I didn't coin the phrase, I adopted it from someone else. But yeah, I thought that was quite nice. And yeah, the plan right now is to get them recorded better. We're kind of, people always ask me what kind of music we play, and I say we're a rock band, and they go, well, what does that mean? And I go, it means we play rock music. We don't play heavy metal. We don't play, you know, I don't want to try to put it into genres. We play rock music. If you've heard, you know, AC/DC and Led Zeppelin and Motorhead and things like that, we play things that are sometimes a bit like that, you know, but it's like classic hard rock, if you like. But yeah, I think it's good because they don't hear a lot of that at the moment. In mainstream music anyway, there's some great bands out there, but I watched Glastonbury this year on the telly, and I watched ages, and I waited to see one band who actually rocked, you know. It sounds mad, and it took me ages, and so the ones that surprised me were the Kaiser Chiefs, they really, really rocked. And they're not a band I've ever really liked before, but when I saw them live, getting people into, getting people moving and stuff, I thought, yeah, they've got something, and they've got an energy that they're transmitting to people, and I appreciate that. So that's what we try and do. I don't know if we always succeed, but we play a mixture of things, bits of blues and stuff as well, but now it's getting more into a fixed style that we've got more songs, so they're probably more like kind of Pearl Jam-y, kind of hard rock type stuff. So yeah, it's fun.
One of the highlights for the weekend, other than having to remind you the first line of the of Gloria, was shouting from the audience the words of Jimmy Carter, "Was a peanut for."
Yeah, that's one of our songs. We that was our first original song, actually. Yeah, first one we did, and it only came about because of a chance conversation. It's like, this is one of these things that sound like they've made it up when you read it in a, you know, legend history of how this record came about, but. Yeah, what happened was, we were just playing one day and we got together. We only formed as a band to do one gig and learn 5 cover songs. And that was the goal. If we could do that, we just thought we'd made it, you know. Oh, you know, that's what we wanted to do. And then very quickly we realized that within the first session of like an hour or 2 hours or whatever it was, we'd learnt like 2 or 3 songs, cover songs and things. But still, we'd learnt them and we thought, hang on, we all seem to be able to do this. And then we just had fun. And then I've always written songs over the years. I've been in many bands and things, playing different instruments and so on. And somebody mentioned Jimmy Carter, and I love stupid trivia facts. So many people don't know that he actually was a peanut farmer, and before he became president. And somebody said something about Jimmy Carter, and I said, oh, did you know Jimmy Carter was a peanut farmer? And they said, that's quite funny. And I said, oh yeah, it is, isn't it? So we kind of went, oh, Jimmy Carter was a peanut farmer. That's quite a good line for a song. And then I went off and wrote the first verse, I think, and some other bits, and I gave it back to the other guys and we played it back. And then the drummer, Ross, wrote the second verse. And he wrote a third verse as well, but I'm not very good at remembering lyrics, as you know. So I tend to just get lazy and do the first verse, and then another verse, and then the first verse again at the end. Yeah, basically. The classic. I can understand why those artists did that now. But so that tends to work really well. And yeah, it's come out really well. It's a kind of like a old rock and roll-y type song. And one of the things I really liked, not to sound too pretentious about it, but when we went to do some concerts and things, we did festivals, we did a festival around Matthew Street in Liverpool where the Cavern is, and we played in the Cavern, and one of the guys said to us, oh, the engineer in fact, at the end, the crowd weren't really that bothered. I think it went quite well, but they weren't that into us. But the engineer said to us, oh, that was really good because you weren't doing any arty bollocks. It was just old-fashioned rock, you know, rock and roll. And I thought, yeah, that's great. I'm not here to wear skinny jeans, and I haven't got enough hair to do fancy things with it these days. And most of it's grey anyway. So I just, you know, I just want to play my guitar. It's not about what I look like or what I'm doing. It's about the music, you know. So people seem to like that, and it's good. I hope it keeps going.
If it's okay, I'll add that song here.
Yes, definitely, of course, yeah. It's under Creative Commons as well, and I know you talk about Creative Commons and stuff on Hacker Public Radio, and the reason that I like Creative Commons, people keep saying to me, oh, why don't you make more money out of music and so on, and it's not about that for me. I mean, the problem is, right now you've got people who are saying that copyright is the only way for art and culture to continue to exist. But the funny thing is, the copyright system hasn't been around that long in the scheme of human history. It's a very, very short period of time that the copyright system as we know it has existed, where huge companies own content and they charge people licenses for them. Before that, we had the Renaissance, we had, you know, how can you say we didn't have art and we didn't have culture? We had the Renaissance, we had Da Vinci, you know, all this stuff. So, and we had classical music. None of that is copyrighted, the actual music scores. Mm-hmm. And still there's this huge industry around it, and people can, you know, learn from it and look at how it's put together and stuff like that. And I think that's really cool. And it sounds, it links back into the open source thing. So that's why we release under Creative Commons, so people can share the songs with their friends, and if they like it, all I want them to know is that it's by us, and, you know, that they might come and look at our website and check out what else we do if they like it. And that spreads our name, and it works pretty well. And you'd be surprised, because, I mean, a lot of people will buy things as well, which is something that the record companies never seem to understand, will buy things even when they're available for free if they like you. If they try it and they say, oh, that's quite good, they will often say, well, even if they haven't got the money right now, I'll save it up and give it to you. I know a friend of mine was just saying this. He downloaded, I think on Torrents or whatever, some album, and he really liked it. And he went on the artist's website and talked to the artist, actually, through some kind of forum, and said, oh, I've downloaded the free version through Bandcamp. No, that's right, it was Bandcamp. He downloaded the free, as in beer version, sorry. And he said, I couldn't volunteer to pay more at the moment because I haven't got any money, because he hasn't got a job at the minute. And he said, as soon as I get a job, I'm going to go back on and buy the thing for, you know, £5, £10, whatever. And the artist said, oh, that's really good, thank you for that, you know, and I just want people to hear it or whatever. And he's since gone and paid the £5, because it's about connecting directly with the artist. So I think it's cool.
And it's £5 minus tax, obviously, going directly into
the
artist.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can say for...
Exactly. I mean, and there's also live things as well. I mean, you can sell tickets and do tours and things. I mean, Jonathan Colton's a great example of this.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, he's been really successful. And his stuff's all under Creative Commons. It's, I think it's by NC, so it's attribution, non-commercial, licensed, which is really cool. And it, even, like, big-name artists have done it now. I mean, I always bring this up, but Nine Inch Nails and Trent Reznor has released lots of their stuff under their albums under Creative Commons, and they're under a remixable license, so they're under CC by NCSA, and all this, I think last two or three albums he's done have been under that, and they still sold hundreds of thousands of copies through Amazon MP3, even though people could download them free. Lots of people bought them. They were still the high, I think Ghosts Volume 4, I'm going to say, that's probably wrong, which is one of his recent albums, was under Creative Commons, and it still became the highest selling MP3 on LP3 album on Amazon for that year, even though people could get it for free, which is amazing, because all that means is more people are getting it. Sure, lots of people are getting it for free, but surely as an artist, you want more people to hear what you do, or if you're a painter, see it or something. And that's really cool. I like that.
It was fantastic to, on the network, we're releasing one of Wayne's, an interview with Wayne.
Yeah, great.
I'm stealing all.
No, yeah, that's great. People. That's what I want. Yeah, that's what I want.
So, Creative Commons artists, is there something that I should really go out and grab a listen to, or?
Well, Creative Commons music. Well, it's something that I get accused of a lot, and Peter Cannon, Dick Turpin, who was here today. He's a funny guy. He said he wouldn't listen to Creative Commons music when I first met him because it was all rubbish, and. He then somehow once accidentally heard Rat Hole Radio and liked some of the tracks and then found out that they were Creative Commons, and he said, oh, this actually sounds like a real band that I might listen to or buy a record of or something. And I said to him, but that's the point, you know. And he got really into it, and he did a thing for a while where he did a thumbs up, thumbs down review, which I thought was fantastic. He used to write on his blog every time he listened to the show, because he's very strange. He's very directly either I hate this or I like it. And he would put each song on the playlist, he would put a thumbs up, thumbs down, and a little review of why. And I always found that fascinating, because I didn't agree, because I like everything play, because that's why I play it. But I can respect that he didn't. And I always wondered, it was interesting to hear his reasons why. And he said that a lot. And I think, tying it back into your original question before I get too far off the point, Creative Commons, I think, there's loads of great artists out there using Creative Commons. I mean, I don't want to keep using Jonathan Colton, but he's a great example, and there's other ones out there as well. There's a guy called Brad Sucks, I don't know if you've heard of him. He's done very, very well.
It's on the MP3 player as well.
There you go, exactly. I love that. I mean, I've told the story before, but I mean, Wayne Myers specifically, Fit in the Conniptions, I heard him randomly on Bandcamp as I was flicking through one day, and I heard a song of his called Drinking on My Own Again. And for me, it sounds weird, but I look at so many submissions and things and songs and that come in. A really funny or interesting title will make me listen to that song. And if it's then quite good, then it's got a good chance. And that's what happened with him. I thought, Drinking on My Own Again sounds like an intriguing title. I'd like to hear what he's got to say about that. And I listened to it, and it was fantastic. And from there, I got his album, and I got talking to him. And I mean, that's the first time we met this weekend physically. I mean, we've talked online. He was on Rat Hole Radio as a guest, fabulous guy, and he is releasing his stuff under Creative Commons, and he's an independent musician still, and he's selling CDs and doing paid gigs and things like that. And I mean, he's still kind of, it saddens me he's not more well known, because he still kind of needs a little bit more a bit more promotion, sorry. And I've been trying to try and help with that, but I don't know whether my kind of reach is far enough. If he was on the radio or something, like commercial radio or BBC or whatever, it'd probably help him a bit more. But if I can push him a bit, that's cool. And he's doing really great stuff. And there are lots of other people as well. I mean, there's I'm Not Left-Handed, who played the Rat Hole Radio gig. They raised £13,000 or something like that on Kickstarter. I think it was Kickstarter, or one of those pledge sites, to record their album. And it worked brilliantly for them. Slice the Pie, it was, I remember now. It was called Slice the Pie, and people bought advanced copies of the album yep. before it was made, effectively. And you could buy, you know, pay $25 instead of $10 to get like a t-shirt with it, and it added bonuses. It went up to, I think, $250 or something you could pay if you wanted the ultimate deluxe signed by the band. With a t-shirt and a mug and a
Yeah, exactly.
And that's really good. And I think that's the way the music industry's got to change now. And going back to Nine Inch Nails, to reuse yet another example, they're doing stuff like releasing deluxe editions of their stuff on very heavily pressed vinyl, in signed custom artwork made by the band. And each one is limited edition, so there are only so many. And they sell for, I mean, they're a famous band, so yes, this isn't a great example, but they sell on, they sold, I think, three or four of these. They only made like four of these very, very top limited ones, and they sold all of them for like, £500,000 and things like that, because there were crazy rich fans out there who would pay it. But it sounds great. It sounds weird, but that's great. I mean, it's a different way. You've got to add value into the product. And I think Creative Commons is, you know, I think it's great for artists. It gets it spread around. And I use it because I think there are other ways to make music if you want to as a business.
Have you, I know that Canadian Broadcast Company had a, they have a blanket ban on Creative Commons music.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Due to the, this may have changed since then. Okay. I have no interest in the fact.
Why is that, do you know?
Because of the use of the non-commercial, and whether it is commercial or not, it was just too confusing for the legal department, so they stopped. I had the same situation with Hacker Public Radio. I wanted to, you know, to put it on one of our cable, test cable networks, so, you know, it would play Creative Commons podcast, but because of the non-commercial, you had to go to every podcast and get the agreement, and it was just too much of a legal headache.
When you can go to an
organization that says, okay, here's the cash, and we're covered for a year.
Well, a great example of something like that was last year for Odd Camp 10, I wanted to show a film, screen a film as part of the events. I always have these strange ideas. It didn't come off in the end. But there was a film that a friend of mine told me about Creative Commons and remix culture, and it's called Remix Manifesto. I don't know how many people know it, but go and look it up.
Links will be in the show notes.
There you go. It's called Remix Manifesto. It came out about 2 or 3 years ago, and it covers the whole remix culture, basically. And within the film, they talk to a guy called Girl Talk, who's a remix artist in America, who uses very short samples of famous commercial songs and remixes them into new works, basically. And of course, that's completely against copyright and all the rest of it. But in America, they have a thing called fair use. So they're allowed to do that because it's considered a fair use. Whereas most countries in the world, I was shocked when I found this out, most, I don't, I was going to say most, I don't know the figures, but most countries in the world seem to have a fair use provision within copyright. And in the UK, we don't. So I wanted to screen this film, and I went on his website and I tried to talk to him, the guy who made the film. And a friend of mine talked to him because she kind of almost knew him a little bit, and she was into film and stuff. And she talked to him, and she said, he said, his advice was download it off BitTorrent and just play it anyway. But I couldn't get any cinema or, you know, respectable place that plays films to agree to do that, because their license would be screwed and they'd be in hot water. And the reason, whole reason, is because we don't have fair use in this country. And you can watch the film in Poland, in the US, you can, you know, all over the world, you know, Asia, whatever, but you can't watch it. And there's a list. The funny thing was, on the website, when you click on it, there's two lists. It says like, you can't get this film for some reason because it's detected where your IP is or something. And you click on it says, why can't I get this? And you click that, and it says, you probably in one of these countries, and there's a list of about 4 or 5 countries where the film is not legal because of the copyright provision, the lack of a you know, fair use provision, and the UK is one of them, and the other countries are some I don't think I've even heard of. And that's kind of sad, I think, but it links in with what you were saying about the concern over non-commercial.
I think there's a change in the law coming up to allow for a limited amount of fair use and copying here in the UK. Well, we've been talking to John, the nice guy, on the subject,
so
there'll be a link in the show notes to that episode where we go into very, very great detail about everything else you need to do to put on music on live. So I guess probably by the time people hear this, we'll know about Outcome 12.
That's a great question.
It's a classic question. Right?
Yes. I don't know anything about Outcome 12, so if you do know anything, feel free to tell me. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's the same thing. I mean, when Ack and Jono and all those guys used to do Radio Live, I think they felt the same way, that you Yeah, basically. I mean, you can probably hear in my voice. I mean, you put all this effort in, and while you're doing it, it's a lot of really hard work. And I mean, I haven't really ever felt bad about it, because I like, as I say, seeing people getting on. I love seeing people having fun, and if we can facilitate that in some way, that's great. But and then you feel really exhausted, and you think, oh, why do I do this? You know, I mean, at some point you get to this point where you think, oh, I just really rather have a rest, you know, and let someone else do it instead. And then usually over a period of time, it can sometimes be weeks, or it can sometimes be a week, or it could be a year, not a year later, but you know, a little time later, someone within the group of kind of six of us will start to say, you know what, I think we should do another one, because that was really good. Because you know, you tend to forget the bad bits and you only remember the good bits.
It's like pregnancy.
Exactly, yeah. And you get to this point and you say, oh, you know what, that is a really good idea. And then you get to about a month before the event when the planning's like hell and everyone's up the wall, and you think, I've done this again, haven't I? And I'm not doing it again. And then you just end up doing it. So, oh, sorry. I would say probably that yeah, it will probably happen again. I can't say 100% for sure, but I definitely hope so, because it's a lot of fun. And we were actually talking. This is kind of hot off the press, but I don't know if I should be saying this or not, but I don't really care. we were talking in there in the bar, and people were saying they really liked the venue we had this year.
Yeah.
And they liked the location. Being a proud northerner, I always tried to get it up. I did it in Liverpool last year, and people really enjoyed coming to Liverpool, and I think it changed some perceptions that people had about the place, which is what I wanted to do. And so that it's not like all grim and grey and your stuff getting robbed and whatever, that it's a really modern cultured city, as I believe. I mean, I'm completely biased, and I admit that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, but I'm proud of my city, and I want stuff to happen there.
Bias doesn't mean it's not,
yeah,
right.
Well, exactly. And that obviously people are saying, why don't you do it in London? And I said, oh, I don't want to do it in London, it's too far away. And you know, I respect that a lot of people work and live in London, and I've got lots of friends that do it, but I'm happier where I live in Liverpool, because I can always get to London in 2 hours on a train, or 2.5 hours if I need to. So it's not out of reach, but at the same time, I don't have to live in it, so it's quite cool. But yeah, so we did it in Liverpool, and then I just didn't want to do it again this year. Well, I did want to do the event, but I didn't want to do all the arranging.
Hard work,
yeah, because it was in Liverpool last year. It was kind of like ended up with me having to do a lot of the work for it. Because I was right by the venue. So Popey found a venue near his house and said, oh, there's a venue near my house. And I thought, that's brilliant. That means he'll have to do everything. And so I said, yeah, I'm really up for that. Yeah, but someone else can do all the, you know, the legwork and stuff. And it's kind of worked out like that. But Tony's done loads. I mean, we've all done a lot. I don't want to sound like I'm playing favourites. But yeah, it's really good. And the people like the venue, apparently. And more people have, much as I begrudge saying this, I do think more people have come this year because we were in a southern location, nearer to London, because lots of people are in London apparently can't travel too far away from it, or they get sick or something, and they can't, you know, they can't deal with it. So
it's
like
the tax when you come
out. Yeah, I think, I don't know what it is. But, yeah, they get agoraphobia or something, and they have to go back. And they just wouldn't leave. So we moved a little bit closer to them, although we're not actually in London, but we're near enough for people to get to it really easy. And it wasn't that hard for me to get to. It was a bit more of a drive for me this year, but well, especially as last year, it was like right in Liverpool.
Gotcha, yeah.
But yeah, it was great, and hopefully we would hope it would be at the same place, but I can't confirm anything at this date.
No.
So everything I've just said might be complete rubbish, and you might not hear anything about it, but I would say it's probably going to happen again.
It was a really nice venue, I thought, and the rooms and everything was together, and the crew.
The crew are incredible.
Absolutely fantastic.
Les is, I've said this so many times, he's going to think I'm stalking him or something, but Les has just done everything. And like a good example is, so we're in the pub here back by the Premier Inn, and when I arrived this morning,
the hotel.
Yes, sorry. When I arrived this morning, Les had already talked to the manager of the bar and found out that it closes normally at 10:30, and asked them if we had 100 people, would they stay open, and agreed it with them without me even knowing. And I just went, oh wow, that's an incredible, yeah. And he just told me he's basically fixed everything, and he keeps doing that all the time, and the more he does it, the more I think this is great, I could get used to this. So it's great, and he's done lots of great work with the crew. Obviously all the people who helped on the crew have been fantastic. We had a lot of great sponsors as well, and we had PDPC gave us money for the bar last night, so it's great that people chip in. I think I'm going to sound really, you know, I don't know, over the top here, but I think like philosophically, like what it is for me is, if you treat people the way you want to be treated, and you treat people well, other people will respond to that, and it seems to happen. I mean, it doesn't happen everywhere. Not everyone's nice, but I believe there's more nice people than nasty people, if in a very simplistic term, you know. But I think that's what happens, and it's great to see nice people come together, because we need to do it more, because then we can show that we're the majority.
I think it's important to point out when we're recording this, you know, this is the weekend of the riots where England is very much in the news about, you know, the selfish culture, I guess. And then here we are at a free culture event. Sort of balancing the whole karma scales, I think.
Possibly, yeah. So that's all we try and do, is bring people together and let them have fun and facilitate. And touch wood, it seems to work, yeah.
Listen, Dan, I'm going to let you go back because you need to go back. Thank you very much for taking the time to do the interview and doing all the rest of the stuff. And again, tune in to hackerpublicradio.org tomorrow for another exciting show.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever considered recording a podcast, then visit our website to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club. HPR is funded by the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. All Binrev projects are proudly sponsored by Lunar Pages. From shared hosting to custom private clouds, go to lunarpages.com for all your hosting needs. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.